ready now? Got all that out of your system?
Yes, Lizzie was born in 1985.
1985?
Why did you make that face then? Alright, well, we're here again with the Murder Goyles. Moida Goyles. Yeah. Round 2/3/4, depending how long this one goes for.
Due to public demand.
Due to public demand, we had people
for the people
say, that was good, the last one you did with the Murder Goyles. That was good and we liked it. That's the most feedback we've ever had.
To the fans.
People tell me it was the best episode we've done, so
yeah,
that means something.
That's nice.
I believe, Emily, you have some feedback from the previous episode as well.
I do. So I have...
Critique?
Oh, no, it's quite positive, actually.
Oh.
It was actually very good.
This is... We started the...
Not too much gruesome detail. Enjoyed the insights, especially the female lens on true crime. Also appreciated Matt as devil's advocate, asking the questions we all have, mostly why.
Yeah.
5 out of 5, would recommend. Looking forward to part 2.
There you go.
Is that a critique?
I didn't say it was a critique. I said it was feedback.
Oh, I thought, like, she had a list of points.
Oh, no.
Okay.
On how to fix it.
Well, that's very nice. Mm. That was good feedback.
Yeah.
We're expecting worse.
I think if we didn't have Matt here to kind of corral the...
Balance the seesaw.
Yeah, that would have gone probably way out of control.
What was your critique of the episode?
I was really just listening to myself and criticizing myself. You two were fine.
Thank you.
Speaking way too much, over the top of people. Apologies for that behavior.
Won't happen again?
Just like, much? Stop talking. No one cares what you think.
Oh, harsh. Come on.
No. Now, listening back on that, it might seem like she directed that at me. Stop talking. No one cares what you think. So,
are you?
Yeah, that's just exactly how it will sound.
Oh, really?
He's going to edit it.
No, that was just my internal.
Oh, that's your internal. Oh, good.
So you guys are fine. It was right. But I think the whole thing, just getting used to it and listening to yourself. And it's a topic that I'm very enthusiastic about too.
Well, you're the only one that's got a list tonight.
Yeah, but I do want to just... Yeah.
She's got a wrist. She's just a loose cannon.
Emily, you don't have a list tonight?
No, I'm riffing it. I'm just going to, because last time I had a list and I didn't actually use my list.
Right.
So I'm just going to go with it and hope for the best.
Fine.
Yeah.
Well, do we have anything to start off with tonight? I've got some questions for you ladies, but we might get to that a bit later on in the podcast. Questions from the listeners. When I said we were doing round 2, a couple of questions were sent through.
We should start with those.
No. Don't tell me how to do my job. I don't come to your job and tell you how to sweep up.
No one cares what you have to say, Matthew.
Exactly right.
But he listened to us.
Exactly right.
The people don't want you, Matthew.
We're stars of this show.
This has got out of hand. You should see the writer they have.
A diva mentality going on already.
The wine.
I'm comfortable.
I have a bendy straw.
There's a selection of wine.
There you go. You need to have your special straw.
Special straw. Oh.
Oh, clinky.
There we go. It's for the, what is it called? The people that like to watch the videos and hear the noises.
Oh, ASMR.
Awesome.
You need to have the, like, hardcore.
So later on we're going to be eating celery close to the microphone. Is that what you mean?
Oh, pickles.
Really?
And they're just the sibilant sounds. Mouth clicking.
All right, let's move on to... okay.
How quickly we can get
That was pretty impressive. Okay, so the first thing you have written down here that I can see, everyone strap yourselves in, more laughs, more cheer coming on, says Suitcase Baby.
Yes. This is a bit of a book club, one that we all read.
Okay.
That Al had recommended. Nice cheery book. Now let's give details, because I think last time we didn't give details. So if anyone does want to read this book, it's called The Suitcase Baby.
Yes.
And it's it's
by Tanya Bretherton. Is that right?
I have no idea.
I think that's right. She's a sociologist. I'm pretty sure that's right.
We're so prepared.
There aren't other stories called Suitcase Baby.
You won't have trouble finding this one.
So what is Suitcase Baby apart from a baby in a suitcase?
Al, you should give a rundown.
It's a non-fiction book written about a woman in the 1920s.
Now, you were right, yes. I'm getting a feeling we did talk about this on the podcast, or was this one of the 8,000 things you brought up after the podcast finished?
I don't think we could have gone either way with that one.
Right.
I think I brought the book that night and passed it on.
And then
I
went from
and
there.
And it's quite a compelling front cover, so.
Right.
It's what do you call it when somebody gets a photograph? You know,
a mugshot.
It's a mugshot of a woman,
old timey,
from the 1920s, and it was the actual woman who had given birth to this baby, and then because her circumstances were so dire, she put the little thing in a suitcase and chucked her into the harbour.
Into Sydney Harbour?
Yeah.
When you say her circumstances are dire, what does that mean?
She was single. She already had a child. She was already passing herself off as a widow, which wasn't true. But, you know, people in that time, that puritanical sort of mode, were investigating, you know, what her past had been, and that was then affecting her efforts to get employment and to get housing and all the rest of it. People didn't want women who were not married and had children hanging around because they thought that they were no good.
Yeah, bring down the standards.
That's right. And she couldn't, she sort of couldn't afford to be caught twice. She was already lying about the little boy, and isn't it funny that people actually snooped around to go, oh, well, who was his father? Mm. Oh, he's dead. Oh, really? We'll prove it. Like, fuck off. You know? She was making do with what she could with him, but then she got caught out with another little fellow, and sadly, I think, which in a way might have made it worse, another man started to show interest in her, but he's not going to take on two children that aren't his, so she just had to find the easiest way out.
Right, and was this a common thing, do you think?
Well, it was quite common. They said that there was a bit of a thing for suitcase babies back then.
Yeah.
Because, once again, we were living in a time where abortion was illegal, women were expected to be married, they had to follow the rules, and if they didn't follow the rules, then you really were kicked up the arse. There was nothing for you.
I think that was the most disturbing part of the book, was that part where she talks about
the headlines
and how there was basically this big, like, the period of time where there were so many babies, and they called them water babies,
that's right,
that were just found frequently
washing up on little beaches.
It's probably a couple of pages in the book where she just describes all these cases of these nameless babies that were found and all the different ways that they were found in the water and sometimes out of the water and shoved in all manner of different places.
Yes,
and they were really poignant, like this fisherman who thought he saw an angel, there was a perfect baby just sort of floating on the water, who had not been dead long and was just this angelic looking thing just sort of floating there, and some of them washed ashore. But it was this pages and pages of it was a common occurrence in 1920s.
Yeah, and you can imagine it would have been, it would have been from a larger class of society. It would have been from people who were fairly desperate, more so. Mm. Although I'm sure that young girls belonging in high class families would have been getting enough pressure to do something. But they had other options. Yeah. They could go and live with Auntie so and so, and then be reintroduced with their new young sister, or the baby be adopted out.
Yeah.
That for women of a certain class system to survive, they couldn't have these babies. And one thing I think is really important is that this is in the 1920s. Children actually are not that important. They're not given the bloody chairs on top of Everest that they are today. They were you know, kids worked, and they, whether they went to school or were educated was not that relevant, and, you know, they was expected to be seen and not heard and all that sort of stuff. So if children could be an impediment, then, yeah, if certainly to your own survival, you've got to, you'd have to take that into account. And a lot of these people were very aware that children taken away and put into workhouses were going to get a horrible life, and that doesn't seem like an option either.
Yeah,
they're sort of, it was, that was a real classic time, of, particularly for women, of you're damned if you did, you're damned if you didn't.
Exactly. That's that's the thought I got in it too.
Yeah.
It's like, what options did they have?
Yeah.
And that even the orphanages at the time were all, they were religious. You know, they were religious based, and they only were available to women who were religious and in that community. And then when the public run ones started to come, they were horrific. And that was the other really terrifying part of the book, where they said about the kids who did go down that route. There was no love. There was no love in these institutions. It was just, they were clothed and fed, and that's it, you know, and those kind of conditions are so, so harmful to children.
The doctrines of the day didn't even recommend love, because that would coddle a child, you know. That it was just sleep and sunshine and, you know, regular meals, and don't pander to them.
Yeah, so that was it.
Yeah.
So their options of what to do were, well, they were so limited. And, yeah, I mean, it makes sense thinking, like, it just seems like such a horrible, horrific thing to do.
Yeah.
But what were their alternatives?
Yeah. And a lot, so I'm not making excuses for anyone who kills a child, but certainly around this book, there was no evidence of children being bashed or tortured or anything. They were, I guess, this particular baby, I think, had been smothered. Smothered and then put in the suitcase.
They often were, that there was something stuffed in their mouth. So they were killed before they were put in the water.
Yeah, definitely. They weren't just thrown in the water. That's pretty horrible. But
they were smothered.
They were, that's a very confronting thing, and it's a very personal thing if you're a mother to do that. I can imagine that would have taken a toll. It's not, I don't think any of this was done lightly.
No.
But I do think that it's all very, this is not about the psyche of the woman, this is about the social situation she found herself in.
Yeah, and she tried, and that's what the book shows as well, she tried to find someone to take the baby. She had written numerous times to the father, you know, begging, do you have a family member that can take the baby? Yeah. She was desperate, and she tried every avenue she could to have someone take the baby.
Yeah.
So how was she caught? If this was happening all the time, quite frequently.
It was actually quite a sort of strange way that they found her, was through that there was a handkerchief inside the baby's mouth.
Oh, right.
And they examined the handkerchief and found like a marking on it that people make when they launder it.
Right, they used to sew initials.
And so they traced it back to where that had been laundered, and then the woman who brought that, like, who owned that kind of item, and then she was the friend of the mother who had sort of helped her conceal the pregnancy, and then helped her kind of dispose of the body. So they did some sort of swift detective work.
And that was interesting at the time, because there were so many babies that were found, but it was very rare that they could actually trace them back. They could with this one because of that hanky. Mm. And then that led down an interesting path, because the woman whose hanky it belonged to, I think, was the friend, wasn't it? And it was a funny duo, because, was it Mary? I wish I should have written down her name. The mother.
Sarah.
Oh, your memory's so good. Was very,
because I'm sober.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? It's not that. It's something else.
Coincidence. Oh, God,
couldn't be to do with that. She was very proper and very timid, quiet and reserved, and wore sort of really conservative clothing. And she had this friend who was like a real promiscuous kind of drinker.
What are they, flapper?
Yeah. Oh, right. Flapper. Yeah. So it was like an odd... They were both from Scotland, I think, how they met. They met in New Zealand when they were there trying to work, and they'd come to Australia. And they had this fucking friendship And she was implicated. She had they had different stories. She kept saying she came home and found her had already Sarah had already killed the baby, but Sarah said no, she helped me kill the baby, and we together went and disposed of the body. So she also went to trial as well. Funny descriptions of them. She was this loud, she'd go out drinking in pubs, and you know, was quite promiscuous, had a husband in New Zealand that she didn't want to be with, and was sort of very, I mean, of the time, you know, quite unusual for the time. It takes you down really interesting paths. I think that book explores different things. The other interesting part as well was how women, well, criminals, who how they were treated at that time, female murderesses.
Yeah.
And
were they like fetishized? Was it like titillating have female murderers?
They were always trying to work out why, and they had, and particularly around, is it infanticide? Yeah. That they were always just trying to work out why. How they were very rarely convicted. They were very rarely given any sort of sentence at all, because it was, oh, how could a mother do that to a child? There's got to be something clearly wrong with them. And the doctor, a very famous doctor, had, and this got a lot of traction, his thoughts was that it was directly linked to the size of their vagina, wasn't it, to if they would murder or not. If they would murder their child or not.
Sorry, say that again, the size of their vagina.
The size of their vagina. So women who had a hefty, wide body shape.
I'm glad you said body
shape. I'm not really sure.
It was basically...
I'm glad you said body shape with those hand actions too.
Bigger the vagina, more likely to kill the baby was the... was the thesis. And he was saying because big
with it falling out and landing on its head, or?
Bigger women with bigger, you know, wider hips and
more voluptuous women.
Voluptuous women with wider Whoa-hors. Passages. That the baby can come
rooming
out
around the hips.
But baby will come shooting out so quickly that they're overcome with, oh my God, I've got this baby, and it's so easy to just get rid of it. Whereas a woman who is smaller has labored you know, really cares for that baby really, when it comes
that
out.
That sounds like vagina shaming.
But do you remember that part of the book?
Some
and it was like accepted that 1920s
vagina shaming.
Classic 1920s vagina
those
shaming.
Those bigger women, you know. I just thought that would be interesting.
Wow.
The thing that gets me with this, and then just like it's, and it's probably like still happening in other places, just the amount of shame and pressure that these women must have felt. Oh, it's just heartbreaking that is your only option.
Yeah.
Like it just
and that tip,
is
you
awful.
Can't make it as a single
no.
person with the child. How you
and
have to have
and there's no responsibility on the father. And if they've fucked off back to Scotland or they've immigrated somewhere else and they don't want anything to do with you, that's all on you. Like, it's awful.
And wasn't it really awful with the little boy who had got quite close to her boyfriend at the time, and he wanted to keep him, and they said no, he had to go to the home. And
a home with a woman in it. And so that's that whole thing, isn't it? On the one hand, they're despising women and saying, oh, you're all a bit stupid and you know, you have these babies and, you know, you're a bit ridiculous.
You're a bit
and
careless.
Like, you're a bit careless, that's right. Like, get a hold of yourselves. Just don't have sex and be a bit sensible and stay at home and look after, be the perfect mother and go to church and all that sort of stuff. And on the other hand, they say, oh, this child needs to go and live.
They need their mother.
You
know,
he needs to live with a woman. Yeah. A woman's got to be the person taking care of it. And then, of course, that poor child ended up having a horrible life and
I think
dying young.
That was so sad. Family, like, I'm sure that every family probably has one of those stories. Like, I know in my own family, there's been, you know, people who've had children and they weren't married. And so the baby was given up for adoption.
Yeah.
And that was like in the 70s. And then, you know, people who've been passed off as the, like you were saying, like the younger sibling.
Yeah.
They've come back with the younger sibling. That's actually their baby. And it's like, it's so common.
That's always been a family gossip in my house is my mum's 14 years younger than her sister. And the gossip was that she was my auntie's actual child. That was certainly not the case, but the rumour, I'm sure, still echoes the rumour.
Yeah,
but I had a great aunt who was in the army in the Second World War.
Yeah.
And she got pregnant. She was a bit of a lad. Lass.
A lad?
She was a great lady. And she got pregnant and gave the child up for adoption to a doctor in Melbourne. And then on her death, my mum was saying, well, maybe we should go and find this child. And the family, it was a resounding no. That you don't do that. That's not going to happen. Don't wreck her life.
Yeah.
And you've got to wonder. We mostly know kids who are adopted know they're adopted, right?
Yeah. But you think, like, you know, saying obviously in the 1920s that was a very specific time period and it was, you know, particularly horrendous.
Mm.
But that sort of stuff is still happening.
It's not me.
What is vibrating?
Not me. I'm not.
Exactly. And I think, you know, and still we have the conversations about abortions. And that
there's
still people who, which I cannot stand that argument of, you know, the woman just, abortion should be outlawed or blah, blah, blah. So, well,
you don't get to make that decision.
Are you going
to
come and raise this baby?
That's right.
Are you going to feed and clothe it and love it? If not, then mind your own business. Like,
exactly.
It's not your body. It's not your choice. No. And women need that choice because, what, like,
because otherwise things like this
exactly
happen.
Exactly. And it was so poignant when I was reading it. It was just like, this is why, even though circumstances are different now, I guess, with options that women have, but, you know, still teenagers are going to get pregnant who do not want the baby, who do not have the means to look after it.
They had abortion then, but it was a horrible option because you could either break the law and be in really major
or
die.
Your life. Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. So the smallest option was actually you would survive not get in trouble.
All these theories, like the one the doctor had, it's because, wider vaginas mean more likely to kill.
Yeah.
But obviously it's because the women who have the babies quickly, there was no one else around. Like, people who labored for days, there would have been other people there, so it would have been harder to dispose of the baby. Whereas ones who it just came out quickly can dispose of it. Why did they not think of that? Like, why did they think it was the structure of the body? But anyway,
because they knew so much about the female body back then.
Trying to just, I guess, make a physiological, there's got to be some reason why these women are doing it.
Well, that's like phrenology. That was
a goer for a while. At the time, with the shape of things, that would have, would affect psychology because it wasn't really.
Because I didn't really understand what was happening internally.
Yeah, exactly.
Mentally, vagina internally, but...
Yeah. But trying to just sort of make
wide
sense of behaviour.
And a large forehead.
Oh, no.
Keep an eye on that one. Keep the law following you at all times.
We just have to have these services for women and... Keep your opinions to yourself.
But that's very hard when you've got a penis. Come on.
Oh, I mean, like Barnaby Joyce coming out and I have a right to protest over abortions. And I have a right to say you...
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yes.
People love being having moralized conversations with a man who's... having a child
who has no morals
with an adulterous relationship.
Take a good look at yourself before you start criticizing other people. Yes. That's what I say.
Anyway, we better not get too much on. We don't want to hear. Yeah.
And that is a particularly heavy of our heavy topic.
Mm. Yes, that's true.
But that's the book. And a couple of times the girls walked in and saw a suitcase baby. Yeah. You're like, what's that about, Mum? Suitcase baby. Just avoid answering that question.
This baby had a suitcase.
Yeah, the baby carried a suitcase.
Having travelled all over the world.
No, yeah. I think you answered. I think you said someone had a baby and it slept in the suitcase.
I think I did.
People sleep in drawers and they sleep in all kinds of things.
A special suitcase that was there for people.
You could easily, comfortably, just the rocking of the.
Oh,
anyway.
It actually feels relaxing.
Exactly, that's what I mean. Yeah, it's supposed to be relaxing for them.
But it was, kids that found this one on the beach. And yes, that was really upsetting too. Some kids came up and found it.
But again, I mean, in the 1920s, those kids, they saw everything, didn't they? Mm-hmm. Dragging their parents home from the pub.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were they still putting up chimneys?
Yeah, yeah.
Did that happen in Australia?
Probably.
Putting well, the we kids don't
have
chimneys?
We don't have very big chimneys, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think 1920s, they're probably still working at like 8.
Yeah, yeah.
Running mail and doing that kind of thing.
In the factory.
Shushine, sir. Shushine.
Yeah, shushine, all that kind of stuff. Telling everyone the cops are coming when you're playing tour.
That's right.
It's true.
Here comes the fuzz.
Yeah, that's true. Here comes the fuzz.
I don't know.
1920s Brooklyn. Is that where we are now?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Were they the fuzz in Australia?
No. I don't know. The wallopers. That's what they used to call them.
Never heard that one either.
You never heard of the wallopers? No. They used to wallop them with their big sticks. That's one.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, good, good times.
Good times. See, they didn't like kids.
No.
No time for kids.
No, didn't like kids, didn't like Irish, didn't like Catholic people.
Yep.
They beat them up.
Certainly not blacks.
No.
Certainly not.
No, certainly not. Bad luck if you were all a combination of those.
That's right.
Mm. Well, yeah.
No luck.
No.
Sort of, and there's always someone in a worse position than you. Like you think at this time, this woman, she was an immigrant. No money, you know.
But she was white.
But she was white. But she had one thing going for her. She had that on her side. She had, you know.
That's correct.
There would have been a whole...
But if she was Catholic,
situation.
This is how racist 1920s were, that if you were Catholic, that would be considered worse, the worst position you can be, because you wouldn't really consider Aboriginal people as people that much anyway.
No, this is very true.
But certainly if she was she Catholic? Because that would certainly...
I think she was Protestant.
Oh, really? I think she was Protestant.
Yeah. Right. Because that always freaks me out, just how much Catholic people were discriminated against even then, couldn't get certain jobs.
There was something in it. She couldn't access one of the orphanages because it was only for Catholic kids or something like that. She was precluded from...
Catholics have always hated them. Well, can we move on from this lovely? This has been
Can we please talk about the Golden State Killer?
Let's bring it into I guess modern times, because in between the last podcast and this one, the Golden State Killer
has been caught alive.
Has
this is
been
big
alive,
but not convicted. Not.
He's going to take
stand trial. All right. Will someone else take over this? Because
can I just have a little? You can talk about the Golden State Killer.
Oh,
but
dear.
I just wanted to say a funny little story that people might enjoy.
Funny little story.
Ha ha. Well, not ha ha funny, but
right.
So Matt says to me, "Watch this guy's comedian.
Right.
He's really funny, and he's got this this really lovely sort of stand-up he does. It's sad and it's funny. It's just really good." And it was Patton Oswalt, who I knew.
Yeah, so it's Patton Oswalt. If you haven't seen it, Patton Oswalt's Annihilation.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to watch the whole thing, I think you can go over that. It's on Netflix and you watch from like the 45-minute mark. And he does a whole 15-minute section of his stand-up. It's about his wife. Passing away.
Now, he did mention in it that she was a true crime writer. I hadn't read her book at that point, but he did mention she loved true crime. She was obsessed with true crime. She was a true crime author. I probably should have looked it up then
and
there.
She had a blog.
She had a blog. Yeah. Anyway, but she had died recently, and he became a single dad with a daughter. But just told the story like I was crying, but it was funny and it was just really touching. He just spoke so beautifully about her and thought, well, that was really good. I was very affected by it and went on with my life. And then I kept hearing about this I'll Be Gone in the Dark on my favourite murder podcast, and I thought, about the Golden State Killer, I'm going to read it. And I'm reading the book and she starts talking about my husband, Patton Oswalt. He's a comedian. He's in Hollywood. I was like, that's her! Made the connection. Oh, my God. Because I just didn't know. I didn't know it was her. Anyway, so reading through the book And obviously I knew that she died, and she had died of natural causes. She wasn't killed by the Golden State Killer or anything, but she died sort of before she could finish the book. So it was finished by some other crime writers. But beautiful, just so beautifully written. I mean, it's funny to say that about a book about a serial killer,
though.
But
it's really
isn't it?
Well written. Yeah.
What did you think about it?
Well, it was weird because I had started it, and then I was sort of partway through when they caught him. And so I was reading it but I knew. So it's kind of like I was in the middle of the book, but I already knew what the ending was, even though that's not the ending of the book. And so it was a very strange thing when she's talking about he did all these things, and I have this like the mugshot of D'Angelo in my head while she's describing kind of he broke into these houses and this is what he did to the people. I'm like, okay, I actually know who he is. I can put a name and a face to this.
Because that's the thing about the book, isn't it? Is that she's writing it all
like
about
almost to him.
They don't have an answer in the book.
It's
all about a theory.
And it's funny because she mentions a few times the theory that he's an ex-cop. That comes up a few times. Yeah. Like, yes, you're onto it. You're onto it.
Yeah. And it's so upsetting because knowing now what we know, that she didn't get to experience that and that excitement.
Is so deeply upset. I mean, wonderful that he's caught, and that's what she says in the book. You know, I don't want accolades. I don't want, you know, I just want him to be caught for justice for the victims. You know,
should we contextualize?
Go ahead.
We're doing that again.
Go ahead.
Please.
Let's put it.
So Michelle McNamara coined the term the Golden State Killer because before there was it the East Area Rapist and the original Night Stalker, and then also someone called the Visalia Ransacker, which was a series of started with burglaries and then escalated to home invasions and sexual assaults, and then eventually escalated again into murdering couples and women in their homes. And so she... But it was in like the 70s, all throughout the 70s,
all
pretty much.
All through the 70s.
And pretty much all the way around California. But Michelle McNamara coined the term because she was the one who sort of said, I think this is the same person, sort of, because people were saying, oh, it's the original Night Stalker and blah, 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 and it wasn't getting that much attention.
Yeah.
And EROMS is like a weird acronym, but that also wasn't getting that much attention either. But the Golden State Killer is catchy, and it's kind of brought it back into the public eye.
And it was a way of bringing all of those counties in together to
and
share information.
To each other.
Because they were all around near each other. But and also I think Ransacker, you know, the Ransacker, the Night Stalker, even the Rapist, it's like none of those things really, people aren't on, they're not on even anyone's radar. But Killer, Golden State Killer, that's like, this is something.
And
this
the idea that it's the whole state of California.
The whole
state. Nobody was safe in the 70s, pretty
much.
And
it was 40 years this guy was on the loose. Well, I think he stopped. He hadn't done anything. It was quite a few years, wasn't it, since he's...
Yeah, and that's what they thought, that he must have died.
Yeah.
Or been arrested for something else.
Quite a while, because it was the 70s. He was prolific enough until the 80s.
And they still haven't figured out why, because he's not really talking. Like
that's what I was going to say. They asked. They've worked out why he stopped.
No, but I think the working theory is that he had children, because he's got teenage daughters.
That's it.
And so
he's one of those. Is he like, how could I be like that?
Maybe
teenage daughters.
Because people, and that's what people always say, and that's, you know, what I always thought was like, that if it was some sort of impulse, you just couldn't stop, but apparently you can. And lots of people, like the...
What about Mr. Cruel?
Well, yeah, exactly right. Mm. Yeah, like that. There are several cases of kind of people who are, you know, murdering or...
Who was they even theorized
sexual,
at one point,
serial
they?
People. That's right.
They theorized briefly that he was Mr. Cruel.
Mm.
Because he'd also spent time in Australia, but the timeline didn't match up.
I wanted to ask you guys about that, actually, because that was way before I was in existence. Do you remember that happening?
I have no recollection of it. The first time I heard about it was listening to Australian True Crime, and it was...
So it wasn't...
Okay, we're going to have to stop again. Okay. What are you talking about?
Let's bring it back to the... We'll touch on Mr. Cruel later. Similar MO... to Golden State Killers, in stalked, obviously had stalked these families, knew everything about them, entered
in
the
Australia?
Home.
Yes, in Melbourne.
Okay.
But, I mean...
In the 80s?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, but it was only, well, let's talk about him in a bit. But Golden State Killer, let's stay focused on him for the minute, because basically 40 years since that he was ransacking, but he hadn't done anything for a while, which they theorised because he had kids.
And then what had happened was, which is pretty incredible, that his like second or third cousin had entered their DNA in one of those like find your family ancestry, like what part how Viking are you or something, like, you know, you spit on the cotton swab and you send it off to a lab and they say you are, you know, 7/15 Caucasian and a blend of other things. And that was a match to his the DNA that they had from the sexual assaults and the murders. And that he was had like a very, on file somewhere.
He had a very rare DNA, like with some marker in it that was extremely rare. So they knew when they got when this guy was so close to it that he had to be related to him and were able to track him down, which I think is amazing.
It's pretty crazy.
And as you know, so great he's caught. I wish Michelle, who has spent so much of her life obsessed with this case, could have.
That created a precedent too, didn't it?
With DNA.
With them being able to find people through that. I mean, it's quite a, like, it's a real sidestep.
Very controversial.
From
and so
the law.
Right.
Yeah.
But as the, you know, as a detective say, Paul Holes, my new favourite person, he's like this superstar detective who was on the case and for years and years and years just also happens to be really good looking and like super, super nice.
Is he really good looking?
Good teeth.
He's good looking.
Yeah, he's good
looking. He's like classically.
He's gotten better with age.
Yes.
Right. Okay.
And he looks amazing. I imagine 20 years ago. He still looks good. He's just retired and he still looks amazing. But anyway, he's just amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Paul Holes.
Maybe I have to dress as him for Halloween.
There probably are Paul Holes costumes you can buy
just
now.
Like a
he's
suit,
he's like big celebrity.
Yeah.
With a gun.
Wasn't it? Oh, he was saying like most people wouldn't even know that your DNA has been used to track down a killer. Like you wouldn't know.
No.
And why the hell would you care?
That's exactly right. And that's what he said as well. That it's, you know, yes, your DNA could be matched to a serial killer. That you know because you've sent your DNA to a random lab somewhere, but also, like, your aunt could call the police and say, I think you need to investigate my nephew because he's a creep.
Without your permission to do that.
They don't have your permission to do that either.
Yeah.
So
right.
I don't see, I mean, I think it's ridiculous. People.
So what's the argument? What's the argument against that happening?
That's an invasion of
privacy issue.
Privacy, that if you send your, if you take a swab, it to on the internet somewhere, that police shouldn't
somebody
be able to
misuses
that.
Your information.
But apparently, if you read the terms and conditions, they do say if they ask for this information to be released, give it to them. If the police ask for it, we'll just give it to them.
But so it's fine to say, hey, I'm related to a Viking, but not, hey, I'm related to a serial killer?
I don't think anyone has...
That's not what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I was from Egypt.
We're just going to borrow some of your spit.
Yeah.
And,
I don't quite...
Look for some DNA
markers. I guess it just is pretty amazing, though, because they must have been so desperate. That is the extent that they are going to with those resources to be trawling and trying to match that database.
But it could be a shared database.
Yeah.
It
so
could
why
be a
don't
database.
Cops have their DNA on a database? Surely that's something that cancels them out when they're in their contaminating
the
crime scene.
Like, they do now, but
they
probably didn't.
No, things have changed.
And how long was he a cop for?
Not long.
Right.
Oh, this is interesting too. He was fired. Well, not fired.
He quit.
He quit because they caught him shoplifting.
Oh, that's right.
He's a shoplift, so there'd be no record of him.
Mm.
Shoplifting, dog bait, or dog repellent, jeez. And
it's too like a torch. Dog bait.
It was some sort of like hammer or saw or something like that, and dog repellent.
He tucked it down his pants.
And they were like, "This is suspicious that you were shoplifting this." Basically, well, we're going to start an investigation. It's just like, "Oh, I quit. I'm not going to be in the police force
because there wouldn't be a record of it." Yeah.
So they didn't.
So even that, you know, to have a policeman go, "Oh, I'm quitting. I've just broken the law and I'm quitting."
Exactly. Yeah.
How does that go? Oh, all right. Okay. You get a free pass this time.
Too much hassle.
Yeah, that's
he made it easy for us.
It makes everything makes so much more sense.
Mm.
Like how he was able to get away
from these houses without being seen, how he was not, because they were canvassing every neighborhood when everyone was kind of on high alert all the time, yeah. because it was just happening so frequently, like that he was breaking into houses and he was sexually assaulting women. And then he escalated to obviously killing people. But when he was sexually assaulting people, there were police everywhere. And he was able to kind of get away undetected, yeah. probably because he knew, like, the lingo, or he would just name drop someone, or just say, I'm here, you know, pretending like he was on duty as well.
Because he must have, because so he had to case these, he had to case out these families. He knew their comings and goings. Yeah. He knew every bit of their house. He was casing them out. Mm. So they reckon that he would have at least been caught, because there would be cops around the area, that he would have at least
been lurking around. Yeah.
Showing a badge on the case as well.
Right. Yeah.
And they knew, well, they were pretty sure he had at least a police
scanner.
Yeah. They knew that much because he was able to avoid them.
Mm.
And another thing he did was super creepy, was he'd tell the victims, well, they'd be blindfolded, and he would always have the husband in a different room.
Mm.
And sometimes he'd put plates, stack plates on their male's backs and say, if you try to move while I'm raping your wife, I'll hear you. And so they'd be there terrorized.
I'll kill her.
Absolutely terrified. Wife, after she was assaulted, she'd be blindfolded, and then he'd be quiet for a while.
Mm. Oh, yeah,
she'd crawl to make a phone call, and he'd poke her and do that a few times, so he'd know she's going to be frozen
and then theater. He's long gone by the time they actually
she actually called someone. He was long gone.
Mm. Imagine
the fear. Imagine living with that after.
And then piece
he would,
of shit.
Then he would call. He'd call some of his victims afterwards and taunt them on the phone. He was just
decades later.
Yeah.
And there was, I saw this one of his victims who's just sweetly spoken, sort of mid-60-year-old now. I saw her being interviewed on some American chat show after the Golden State Killer was caught, and they said, what would you say to him? And she was like, I just want to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
This sweet little old lady.
Yeah.
Terrorized her. And marriage is broken up, and, you know, imagine, how do you get through that? And, you know, just that thought, and I'll never be able to get that out of my head. And Michelle McNamara just describes it so beautifully, what he did, his MO. And it was always these married couples.
Mm.
And he, you know, and the Golden State Killer would appear at the foot of their bed with torchlight, balaclava, or ski mask.
Absolutely terrifying. Yeah.
And torchlight face. How?
Yeah. Because it's about that power and the control, and then being able to say things like, I think that one of the things that they thought was that, he was kind of surveilling the houses and he was getting to know their routines and stuff, but also the idea was like he probably knew them in real life, because some of the things he was saying to the women was like, I saw you at this thing, or like there was a woman who had a boat in her yard, so he was like, I saw you on the lake. And so she's going like, holy shit, I know this guy, but he's just fucking with her because he saw that she had a boat in her yard. So it was like not like a massive jump to assume they go boating in the lake. Like,
and the other thing, after reading the book, after the Golden State Killer was caught and these things come out about the killer, as I said, we knew she was saying they thought he was a cop. He was an ex-cop.
Yeah, she was so close.
She was so close. What was the other thing that she was close to? I'm sorry, totally forgotten.
Was it the arc, the building stuff, like the homework?
Well, he often made appearances where there was construction work going on, which they had a theory for a while that he was an architect or somehow involved in
a development person.
I remember what it was. Some of the victims, well, a few of them said that he would scream out, I fucking hate you, Bonnie. And some people thought he was saying mommy, and others clearly heard him say Bonnie. And D'Angelo's
and he had an ex-wife
called Bonnie.
Yeah.
And then, when you read it, like, you're right, he was saying Bonnie. She was so close.
Yeah.
And, you know, really kept, she just kept on keeping it in the spotlight, keeping on with, you know, meeting up with the investigators. I've got these clues. Mm. She'd research. She really had, you know, a good working relationship with Paul Holes and others who were on the case. She would research. They would share information. She kept it alive because you think after a while they just don't have the resources to keep on with these things. So
on that, I actually really love the idea that she talks about that there are all these people who are similar to us, interested in cold cases, and they spend a lot of time just personally going through stuff, and she got in contact with a lot of those people. There's
stuff that can actually do that's really helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of whom helped finish the book. These people who just spend, like, it's a hobby. They go through cold cases. They're armchair sleuths, internet sleuths. They just sit there and that's what they do. And people are relying on them a bit more to... Mm.
Doesn't it make you so, and I guess that's probably like a good segue into the Mr. Cruel thing as well. Like, doesn't it give you hope that, because that was like 40 years later and everyone had sort of given up, that because we have so much more technology now, that there is hope that they could solve some of these kind of bigger...
There's more at stake. These people who want to take these risks, there's more at stake. There's more chance they're going
to
get
busted. And you'd hope that would be enough to deter, future serial predators.
I don't know if they've ever said with Mr. Cruel, though, so we're now talking about Mr. Cruel, who was the Australian killer. Mm. He did, I mean, he's definitely killed one, so Carmen Chang. And then there were the two that he definitely kidnapped and assaulted and returned home.
Kidnapped female children, and broke into the house and took them, like, very brazenly, kind of.
I think the first two was when the parents were home.
Yeah. And he, like, locked them in a cupboard or something.
And took the girl, but returned them.
And was 50 hours later.
But was meticulous with his care of them.
Mm.
In fact, both the victims that they found alive said he was very gentle with them. And
like a mother bathing a child.
But that detail about how he would take the girls to a house somewhere and obviously he sexually assaulted them, but then afterwards he bathed them, he flossed their teeth, he brushed their teeth, he put bin bags on the floor of the bathroom
and
so that they couldn't touch.
Yeah.
Their skin did not touch the floor.
No.
Like
he was
onto
meticulous
DNA in the 80s before it was even that well
and
known.
And I don't think...
Which is like, he's a cop.
Theory is that he's a teacher.
Yeah.
Because it was always done in school holidays.
Yeah.
And
his attitude
with managing the kids was that... Was very gentle and caring outside of.
Yeah, that is weird, isn't it?
It sounded like the way that he was talking to them and the way that he kind of, in his head, it was like a consensual relationship.
Yeah,
with
that's
these,
right.
They were children and
he's
a monster.
Yeah.
But it sounded like, you know, he was very attentive and like quite tender with them, which is creepy and awful.
Yeah. So, but he would obviously not see himself this way because he's taking them home.
And then he's saying, I'll have you home in 50 hours. And then exactly 50 hours he had returned.
They would be
home. They were.
But because he'd done that with the first two, when he took the third child, they all had hopes. Because the other two returned safely. But her body wasn't found for a year. Carmen Chang, a year after she was taken and it looked like she was killed within a day.
But her mum had said that she was the kind of kid who would not have, she didn't take authority and she always challenged her. And if she tried to remove the blindfold and actually saw him.
So that's
because he had said to one of the kids who was returned, he had said that my freedom's more important than
your
life.
That's true. And they think that she pulled the mask off or somehow his identity was threatened so he couldn't return up.
So, Al, you said that you remembered... that happening.
I remember
Carmen
Chang.
Do you remember
that change?
Because that's what they always talk about, the way that it changed how people perceived, like, how safe you were as a child and not letting kids go out by themselves.
Or
so do you remember that happening?
Not in my neighbourhood. not in my neighbourhood. But I can certainly imagine Melbourne would have been... pretty paralyzed by it, certainly.
Yeah.
I mean, this little girl, Carmen's situation was the big one that I remember because it was on the news. You know, has anyone seen her?
Because it was a year that she was missing.
Yeah, that's right. So for a long time, you know, they were always talking about their hopes for, and they were picking up people and thinking, you know, checking them all out.
Mm.
But, yeah, and then all of a sudden it dropped off the radar.
Yes.
But I don't remember much about, like, they didn't, the news of the abductions of the previous kids, I don't recall that trickling through to Canberra much until Carmen
I just looked it up, and yes, I remember. I remember that photo. Yeah. She was about the same age as me.
And her mother made a very emotional plea.
Yeah.
And was saying, and she said, "I'm not going to call you Mr. Kind. I'll call you Mr. Kind because I know you're going to return her." I just don't know these parents. Apparently, it would destroy you. And
but you know what? Who knows? Abused. Maybe that was the thing that broke this guy because he already knew that he'd killed this girl. And hearing the mum say that, maybe that was the thing that made him go, "Okay, I need to not do it."
Stop. He never did again, and also that he had to, that he killed her. Like, and that, you know, maybe he really didn't want to kill them. Absolutely. I mean, he's obviously a piece of shit, but
you know that it's so these three, like, he had actually, they say that there were more things prior to the two main abductions, that there was.
I don't know if
they but these two were DNA. Absolutely just exactly the same. No, he never did.
So they're Buckley's, but they're prime suspect, that guy who, the university professor who was jailed for abusing kids, is his prime suspect. But he doesn't like people harassing him. And whenever someone is abused, the police come and question me. That's, I've done my time.
Yeah, it's very unfair.
No, you assaulted and abused people. You will be questioned when these things happen again.
That's right. It's a consequence.
Consequence of your making that decision.
Yeah. And isn't that the sort of the theory as well? Like, yeah, maybe the fact that he had to, but like, in his eyes, he had to kill Carmen. That might have been enough to kind of say, this is, I have to stop.
Too far.
But also, isn't the theory that they did talk to him and it scared him? Police interviewed him.
Well, I'm just looking here and it says police are unable to eliminate 32 people interviewed.
Mm.
So there's still 32 suspects.
Yeah.
But there's no DNA.
What do you do? So this is 30 years later, right?
Yeah.
So
what do you do with those 32 people? You just keep them. Eggs on them? Or?
Maybe.
You can't monitor 32 people. You don't have that much money.
DNA into it. But
they
wouldn't have anything to compare it to.
But it's not TV. You don't have, like,
can we just get
watching 32 people? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did we talk
you get
about
one
this
for a week.
Last
well, attach
time...
a little GPS to your ear, though.
The circles of security. Did we talk about this? Remember in the Australian True Crime where they had that? They were talking about the circles of security program, which is when there's sex offenders, when they are released back into the community, that they train people around them, like community members.
Oh, yes.
To
see if they're going to reoffend.
Yeah, and they keep tabs on them.
There's not enough resources.
What, like family members?
Family members. So wherever they return to, they train people around
them. Can you imagine
them.
Being the family member and, you know, this is, he's got to come back. He's got to come
he's
back to you.
Somewhere.
But there's public opposition because it's funded, right? It's a government-funded program. I will happily donate $20 a week to have these offenders monitored closely by their family. I think that's a worthy cause. Like, what is wrong with people? You want to just release them back into the community where they can do what the hell they want with no one watching them. Police aren't going to monitor them. This is a program where, you know, these people, they're going to be in the community whether you like it or not.
Mm.
Let's make as, you know, put as many things
I listened to this interesting, it was like on the ABC, might have been Inside or something, about how there's, because we have an aging population and a lot of people in nursing homes, there's also an aging population of sex offenders that need to go somewhere when they've served their prison sentence, but they can't go to kind of quote-unquote regular nursing homes because
the
they are...
community.
Yes,
there.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
So, the, you know, sort of like, what do we do with all of these people? Mm. So they're talking about, you know, building... like for-purpose nursing homes or nursing homes that are in prisons, but then they shouldn't
I'm like air quoting, shouldn't be in prison because they've served their time and it's not fair that there's nowhere for them to go. And it's, yeah, it's
that sounds like a place to pedophiles.
Yes, I have seen that. Yeah. Louis Theroux.
But again, it's like they're very expensive to run these facilities, but... Hello, like I'd happily give money for this cause. There we go,
Justine's all over it.
Justine wants to do that.
Start a GoFundMe, Just.
Yeah, like, but it's one of those things out of sight, out of mind. Like, but they are in our community. They're living next door.
Maybe we can have like a home for unwed mothers, so they don't have to do anything horrendous to their babies, and then like another home
for pedophiles.
Separate places.
Yeah. Yeah.
These are our two big ideas.
Yeah.
Not on the same street either.
No.
Let's not do that.
Separate states. Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to have a little break because we're at the end of another episode and we're going to come back and do another one soon. But I have a question from a listener.
Oh, yes.
While we can, which is beautifully worded from listener Stu, friend of the show, who wrote, if you had to neck someone, which of the other murderinos would you most want to plan the murder with and why? Which?
You actually.
I'd put my trust in you, Matthew.
Really?
Yeah, because you'll be my... Now, hang on a minute.
Yeah, you'll be my Ishigami.
Hang on a minute.
Okay.
That's not going to work. You can have to come Ishigami. Up with something else.
Read a book very similar to this, a Japanese bestseller.
Ishigami.
He's the character who basically plant. Well,
it's
he's the guy you want around if you've done something bad, and he'll take care of it.
Right. So, I'm not a murderer.
I'm not going to get you to take care of it. I just need you to be the brain to
talk you down.
I'm the
I can take care of it.
You need to come to me.
I just need to work it out so I don't get in trouble for it.
Right.
I probably
I'm not a murderina. You're the murderina. You go with Justine.
I wouldn't.
Oh, you wouldn't?
So by process of elimination, I'd go with Al.
Why not?
You would talk to
and everyone's going to be...
Look at you.
Red wine in. Probably wine.
Have some wine to say, oh, you know what? I've got a story to tell you.
Yeah.
Let's make it hypothetical.
I got
a huge...
I got a little
probably wise. Was I not meant to tell people about I've told one person.
Yes.
That's all.
You're right.
Just
I can be your person. I'll take care of it.
At the prefect.
I can even get a prison kiss. I get someone else cooks for me.
Yeah, last time you said, I take some books. I'm sure it's a great time. That's a quote from
the library.
Yeah, that's right. You'd be in the library.
Okay.
You'd be fine.
I'm all right.
So you'd help just to be the person to blame. Oh, I'll take the hit for you. You'd be fine.
I'd have to I do like him enough to take that.
You're gonna
I wouldn't do that for
the rest of your life.
I would not want to get caught, though. I'm just saying, I feel like I'd be more likely to get caught if it was
I'll help you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But
getting caught.
I would have to agree. So. Yeah.
If I had to choose, I would certainly choose Emily because the other two I'll get caught.
I do get caught with everything I do. This is very...
We'd be at the murder scene having a chat.
We'd go, what were we doing?
Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway.
That's right.
Yeah, we'd get distracted easily. So that would be the case.
That's a problem.
And Justine, I don't know. I don't know what would happen is we would turn on each other like a 90s crime movie where people try and get away with something and end up turning on each other very quickly. I think that's what would happen.
Could you, honestly though, could you live with that secret if you did kill someone?
No. I have the guiltiest face.
I think the question is, could you kill someone? That's the first thing.
The reasons why you got to kill them.
Yeah.
So you kill
if I got to kill someone,
it's justifiable, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You just missed the quote of the night. If I got to kill someone, I can justify it. Like, I can live with it. That's what Alta said, which is 100% right. If you got to kill someone, then...
Lucky I like you.
The only person who I think I could kill, actually
all could right. kill... All right.
Is...
Join us next episode when we find out the answer to this question once Justine has a cold shower and a dose of salt.